The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. If you like to gamble, remember you can find Sports Talk with Trop's preferred sports books on my official website, katietrop.net. Just go to the Sports Talk with Trop tab, and you will see right at the top of the page, there's a banner that says Sports Talk with Trop preferred sports books. So if you are into gambling, go ahead and sign up there because I got some good selections for you. So let's get right into the snooze fest that was Thursday Night Football. Honestly, that was to be expected, in my opinion, just because both teams are pretty mediocre at best. But Pittsburgh did get the better of the Titans. They actually had a nice little fourth quarter drive at the end of the game there to take the lead, go up 20-16, and they ended up getting the win. Defensively, of course, the Steelers held it down as they normally do. T.J. Watt had this amazing sack where he got his helmet ripped the fuck off, and he still sacked the motherfucker. So, you know, the Pittsburgh defense just takes care of business. It's their offense that's just so terrible, but they get the job done. I will say, though, I think the Titans do have a future with Will Levis at quarterback. I mean, this guy, the first two games that he stepped in, he looks pretty confident. He looks pretty good. He's got a nice cannon arm on him, and that will come in handy in some games. And, you know, he's got DeAndre Hopkins to just toss the ball up to. So if I'm the Titans, I'm just going Will Levis the rest of this season. And I'm just betting my future on him right now, at least. Just Tannehill, I don't really have a huge issue with him. It's just he gets injured a lot. He's a decent quarterback, but he's not that great. And I think you just got to give the starting position over to Will Levis. I really like what I see from this guy. And that's what I think the Titans should do. Who knows if they're going to go that route. But they definitely, I think, have a pretty decent quarterback on their hands. So let's get to the rest of the Week 9 and my head-to-head matchup with the homie Simon Ruvalcaba. Last week, I went 13-3 to make my record 77-45 on the season, and Simon went 14-2, so congratulations to him for actually sticking with his Carolina Panthers because that was what put him over the edge last week and tied everything up. So we were both at 77-45 on the season, so we'll see where we're at for the rest of the week. We both had the Titans last night. I had the Titans winning 19-10. He had the Titans winning 28-17. So we both start the week off at 0-1. So let's get right into Sunday's games. We have us our first Germany games of the weekend. This is the first year the NFL is playing in Frankfurt, Germany. So we've got a good matchup too for the Germans. Miami Dolphins at the Kansas City Chiefs. Right now the Chiefs are a 2.5-point favorite. I've had my concerns with the Chiefs. Like I've continued to say, that offensively, it's all Mahomes and Kelsey, and they really have to find at least one other player who can make some big, consistent plays. So far, that hasn't really happened. Defensively, though, I really actually do like what I see from the Chiefs. Miami, on the other hand, I also have concerns with them. Not on the offensive side of things. They can blow anybody out of the water offensively. But once they go up against a good defense, they have problems. And I kind of feel like that's going to be the issue here. Now, travel could play a part in this because Miami actually got to Germany earlier in the week to kind of adjust to everything. And the Chiefs actually just got there yesterday, I believe, or today. Regardless, that's to me is cutting it close. So I wouldn't be shocked if Miami got the win. But for me, I just am going off of what I see from both teams on the field. I'm not going to really factor in time differences and all that shit just because that's just, it usually doesn't matter in the end. But I'm just going with Kansas City Chiefs in this one, 27-21. I do think it's going to be a close game. But like I said, the Dolphins have yet to actually prove it against a good team. They've blown out pretty bad teams for the most part. And when they go up against good defenses, it's been an issue for them. So I kind of feel like that's going to be the problem here. I feel like Kansas City defense is going to hold it down against the Miami offense. And Kansas City's offense is going to score just enough and take care of business like they normally do. So I have the Chiefs winning. And right off the bat, Simon and I disagree. He's actually taking a risk. He's going with Miami 35-34. So like I said, I wouldn't be shocked if I saw Miami win just because I kind of feel like it is a better thing to get there earlier in the week rather than later. But like I said, if you actually look at the statistics on that, it actually is about 500. So it really actually doesn't matter. But I just, when I heard that the Chiefs just got there, I'm kind of like, wow, that kind of feels like odd, but who the hell knows? Then moving on to American soil, the early games, we've got the Minnesota Vikings at the Atlanta Falcons. Right now, the Falcons are a 4.5-point favorite. And they do play well at home. And, you know, Minnesota, they lost Kirk Cousins for the season last week. So they're probably reeling from that. But they did trade for Josh Dobbs. Now, he's not that great of a quarterback, but he has proven that he could step in and make some plays when he needs to. And I feel like the Vikings are a bit more talented than Atlanta, especially on the defensive side of things. Atlanta is just too shaky for me. They have no idea what they're doing. They have no identity in any way, shape, or form. So I'm just going with the Vikings in this one simply because I think they're the more talented team and the better team. But I do have them winning a close one, 20-14. This is another one that Simon and I disagree on. He's actually going with Atlanta to win 23-17. Then we have the Arizona Cardinals at the Cleveland Browns. Right now, the Browns are a 7.5-point favorite. The Browns' defense is just absolutely dominating on every single level this year. And Arizona is just flat out terrible. Now, Arizona has, they've had their moments where they've played with heart. They pretty much give their all in the majority of the games they've played this season. But they're just not a good team overall. They have a different quarterback coming into this week. So just because I feel like the Browns defense is really just going to roll in this one, I've got Cleveland winning 28-10. And Simon also has Cleveland winning 23-17. Then we have the Los Angeles Rams at the Green Bay Packers. Right now, the Packers are a 2.5-point favorite. Matthew Stafford's status is up in the air right now for this game. But regardless, I just think the Rams are the better team. They have more talent on the offensive side of the ball. Defensively, they do get the job done. And the Packers have just been reeling for the most part all season. Jordan Love is obviously not the future of this franchise. He's probably just going to keep them above water for the most part this season, and they're probably going to move on next season, or at least look to move on next season. But I just think overall the Rams are the better team, even though they may be missing Stafford. If they do have Stafford, 100% they're the better team. And I'm just banking on that Stafford is playing. So I think the Rams are going to roll over the Packers 30-10. And Simon also has the Rams winning this one 23-20. Then we have the Washington Commanders at the New England Patriots. Right now, the Patriots are a 2.5-point favorite, and this is just the battle of the horrible teams. Both teams are just absolutely dreadful this year. So that means it's probably going to be a close battle. I feel like this is going to be actually a very ugly game for both teams, where it's just kind of like the exchanging of field goals, and somebody's going to get some random touchdown here just to kind of put their team over the edge. And I'm just going with New England on that one. Washington, while they put up a good fight against the Eagles last week, that is a division opponent, and Washington is just bad. And they got rid of all of their good defenders this past week, traded them away. So I just kind of feel like New England is in a better position at this current point in time. So I have New England winning the ugly game of the week 17-12. And this is another one that Simon and I disagree on. He has Washington winning 20-17. Then we have the Chicago Bears at the New Orleans Saints. Right now, the Saints are a 5.5-point favorite. Chicago is just terrible. There is absolutely nothing good to say about this team. They are one of the absolute worst teams overall in the league. Offensively, defensively, special teams, coaching. I don't know what is worse than the Chicago Bears, really, at this point in time. They are terrible. New Orleans, on the other hand, is starting to click on all cylinders offensively. That's been their weakness for the most part. They've really haven't been getting it going, but now that Kamara's got a few games under his belt, Derek Carr is getting it going. This offense is looking pretty damn good, and their defense has been good all season long. So I expect the New Orleans Saints to roll in this one 41-7. Simon also has the Saints winning this one 24-10. Then we have the Seattle Seahawks at the Baltimore Ravens. Right now, the Ravens are a 5.5-point favorite. I feel like this is a very evenly matched game. I kind of feel like both of these defenses are just scrappy. They take care of business. And then offensively, Seattle has its moments, but Baltimore is much, much more consistent. I do expect Seattle to make this a good-ass game. I wouldn't be shocked if we have like a walk-off field goal in this one or a last game-winning drive, something like that. But I do think the Ravens are the better team. They are at home. So I have the Baltimore Ravens winning a close one, 28-27. And Simon has the Baltimore Ravens winning this one, 30-20. Then we have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Houston Texans. Right now, the Texans are a 2.5-point favorite. I was very hesitant in this one, but I am going with Houston in this one. They're coming off of a loss last week. Tampa is starting to fall apart. They're starting to look like what we expected them to be, not a very good team. And Houston, they just play with a lot of heart. They've got a lot of young, scrappy guys. They're going to be at home. So I have Houston winning a close one, 23-21. And Simon and I disagree on this one as well. He has Tampa Bay winning this one, 24-16. Moving on to the late afternoon games, we have the Indianapolis Colts at the Carolina Panthers. Right now, the Colts are a 2.5-point favorite. I feel like the Colts are just the slightly better team. Carolina, they did get their first win last week, but it wasn't in convincing fashion. The Colts, I feel like, are just slightly better. They have slightly a bit more talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball, where Carolina's still trying to figure out a lot of things. So I do have the Colts winning a close one, 24-20. And, of course, as expected, Simon is going with his Carolina Panthers in this one, 24-21. So we once again disagree on that one. Then we have the New York Giants at the Las Vegas Raiders. Right now, the Raiders are a 3.5-point favorite. Both these teams are absolutely dreadful. But I just kind of feel like now that the Raiders got rid of Josh McDaniels, it kind of feels like it's... the players are all happy about it. Obviously happy about it. They've been over the moon, basically, about Josh McDaniels getting fired. So I kind of feel like they're going to rally around Antonio Pierce this week. Usually when you make a big shakeup like that, especially against a terrible team against the New York Giants, I feel like Vegas is a better team. I don't expect them to go on some type of tear and have this amazing playoff run, but they're playing against one of the worst teams in the league, the New York Giants. They are awful, and who knows what's going to happen at quarterback with them this week. So I have the Raiders winning a pretty decent sized game this week, 23-3. And Simon also has Vegas winning 23-20. Then we have my Dallas Cowboys at the Philadelphia Eagles. Right now, the Eagles are a 3.5-point favorite. And this is prove it time, Cowboys. Now, I will say, Dak owns this division. He owns every team in this division. And people don't really talk about that. I find it amusing that, like, for example, Patrick Mahomes, he owns his division. He smacked every team up and down in his division. Now, I'm not trying to compare Dak and Mahomes. They are both completely different quarterbacks. Mahomes is much, much more talented than Dak Prescott. That is not what I'm trying to say here. I'm just trying to point out that it does matter when you own your division. It does matter when you have a great record in your division. And you know what? Patrick Mahomes has dominated a shit-ass division, just like Dak has. Now, the Eagles are a good-ass team this year. I'm not even trying to say that. They are obviously, right now, the most talented team. They seem to be putting it together offensively. They've won in many, many different ways, but this is a division battle, and division battles are always fun. So I'm expecting this to be a back and forth between the Cowboys and Eagles. I expect it to be a close one. Would not be shocked if this comes down to a last second drive, something of that nature. But I do have the Dallas Cowboys winning, of course, 31-28. I just think defensively, they're going to do just enough to stop the Eagles in the critical moments. And also, Dak is, ever since that Niners game, he's really, really been spot on. He has been making great throws, like with heat on them. You know, usually he throws ducks. He throws those passes that start to sputter out at the end, and that's one of the reasons why he throws a lot of interceptions. This year, he's actually been pretty good at limiting the turnovers. And part of the reason why is he's really, especially these last couple of weeks, delivering some dimes. So I feel like Dak is putting it together. I think the Cowboys offense is going to do enough to get the win. So I've got the Cowboys winning a close one, 31-28. And this is where Simon and I disagree yet again. He's got Philadelphia Eagles winning a close one, 26-16. Then we have the Sunday night football game. We have the Buffalo Bills at the Cincinnati Bengals. Right now, the Bengals are a 2.5-point favorite. And to me, the Bengals are one of the hottest teams in the league. They're playing some great football right now. Joe Burrow is back to healthy. Him and Jamar are just clicking on all cylinders. And then, as I've said, to me, the Bengals, their defense is really fucking good, and it's really kept them in games, and it's actually got them a few wins here. So I feel like this is going to be obviously a really solid battle between two really good teams, but the Bills have not been convincing at all to me. And like I just said, the Bengals are on fire, and they actually look convincing. So to me, I feel like the Bengals, they're on a roll. They're looking really good. Buffalo has yet to really show us anything other than against the Miami Dolphins. And so I feel like this is going to be a close game. I feel like it's going to be a great game to watch. But I've got the Bengals winning a close one, 24-21. And Simon also has the Bengals winning a close one, 27-20. And the Monday night football game is the Los Angeles Chargers at the New York Jets. Right now, the Chargers are a 1.5-point favorite. And the Jets are not a good team. Defensively, they're actually really good. But offensively, there is nothing going on. Whereas the Chargers, they seem to have gotten it together better defensively. And they look really good on offense. So I just kind of feel like the Chargers are going to roll in this one 38-7. And Simon also believes the Chargers are going to roll in this one 20-10. And we do have some teams on bye weeks this week. We have the Denver Broncos, the Detroit Lions, the San Francisco 49ers, and the Jacksonville Jaguars all on a bye week this week. Moving on to the World Series, we have us a new champion. That would be the Texas Rangers. Congratulations to the Texas Rangers. They totally just dominated. A, they did not lose one game on the road in this entire postseason, so that's fucking phenomenal. Game 5 was actually a huge battle between both teams. I mean, Zach Gallen had nobody could score on him, I think, through 6 innings, and then Texas just started to get it going. They scored a run, I believe, in the 8th inning, and then it just went off from there. The 9th inning, they just went off, and they took game 5, 5-0. Corey Sager was the MVP. He had 3 home runs and 6 RBI, and the 3 home runs were all game-changing, turning point plays in the game, so that he obviously deserved it. He's great defensively as well. He's actually one of very few players to win the World Series MVP twice with different teams. So congrats to Corey Sager. And then, of course, my dude, Bruce Bochy. I told you, he was going to come in and turn this team around. Did not think they were winning the World Series year one, but they did. Bruce Bochy is that dude. No fucking lie. He just proved it yet again. I mean, Adolis Garcia, they lost their best player, and they still overcame it. It didn't fucking matter. They still played great. He made all the right moves when it needed to. Their bullpen was so shaky coming into this postseason. Didn't fucking matter. Boch knows what to do. He got his 4th World Series ring as a manager. So congrats to the Rangers. Congrats to Bochy. Congrats to Sager. Congrats to that entire fucking organization for what an amazing turnaround. I mean, this team was terrible for the last couple of seasons before they picked up Bochy. This team, a couple of years ago, lost more than 100 freaking games. And here they are, finally winning their first World Series. Parades up in Dallas today. So congrats to them. Now let's move on to the NBA. And the NBA in-season tournament begins today. It took me a bit to wrap my head around this entire shit. I already said when they announced this, I think this is kind of stupid, but whatever, they're doing it. We'll see how it goes. But basically, they've split each conference into three different groups. There was this whole convoluted way they did it. I'm not getting into how they did it. But basically, out of the three groups, one team, whoever has the best record out of each group, wins the group, and then there's going to be a wild card team. So we're going to have a total of four teams out of this, out of the three groups in each conference, move on to the next round. And then ultimately there will be a champion of this little in-season tournament. It all counts towards your record and blah, blah, blah. It is very, very fucking convoluted. But hey, here we are. It's going to be going through the next month. Like I said, it starts today. I believe the championship is what I've got it written down here. December 9th is when the actual championship is going to take place. And so, let's go ahead and make some predictions here. The way this works, like I said, it's very convoluted, so I'm only going to break down the first groups and predict who I think is going to win each group and who's going to move on to the wild card, because it's, like I said, even convoluted once we get to these final fucking four teams on how it works and yada, 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 but here we go. So, East Group A has the Philadelphia 76ers, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Atlanta Hawks, Indiana Pacers, and Detroit Pistons. They will all be playing against each other, and basically whoever has the best record out of all of them will win East Group A. I believe it's going to end up being the Philadelphia 76ers. Right now, the Cavaliers, they're battling through some injuries to some of their key players. The Atlanta Hawks have no consistency. The Pacers are terrible, and the Detroit Pistons are terrible. The 76ers did just finally trade away that cancer on their team, James Harden. So, and they really didn't, he wasn't playing at all for this team. So he wasn't really coming in and ruining things chemistry-wise. So I think the 76ers are good enough to win in East Group A. Then in East Group B, we have the Milwaukee Bucks, the Miami Heat, the New York Knicks, the Washington Wizards, and the Charlotte Hornets. And let me tell you, out of all the groups, especially in the East, this one is stacked. I was like, damn, these teams got to play against each other. I feel like this is going to be one of those where it's like they are just beating the crap out of each other, because the Bucks are good, the Heat are good, the Knicks are good, the Wizards, not too good, Hornets, they've got potential to be good, but this is going to be a really difficult group to get out of. But I've got the Bucks winning in this East Group B. And then East Group C is the Boston Celtics, Toronto Raptors, Brooklyn Nets, Orlando Magic, and the Chicago Bulls. I feel like the Celtics are going to easily win in this group because the Raptors are terrible, the Nets are terrible, Magic are terrible, and the Bulls are terrible. So Celtics should actually roll through East Group C. Then turning to West Group A, we have the Los Angeles Lakers, the Utah Jazz, the Portland Trail Blazers, the Memphis Grizzlies, and the Phoenix Suns. This group, I feel like the Lakers and the Suns are really the only good teams right now at this current point in time. And, you know, while there's still some questions about the Lakers, they've had some really good moments so far this season. So I think they're going to win this group. A, that's my Lakers bias. And also, I just feel like they are the better of the teams. They have more chemistry. The Suns seem to be still, they're battling through injuries, of course, but they're still kind of trying to find their way, whereas the Lakers, they are basically what they were at the second half of last season. So I've got the Lakers winning in West Group A. Then in West Group B, this is going to be a group that beats the shit out of each other. We've got the Denver Nuggets, the Los Angeles Clippers, the Dallas Mavericks, the New Orleans Pelicans, and the Houston Rockets. Right now, the Nuggets, still the best team in the West. Clippers, terrible, but they're a talented team. Mavericks are on fire right now. The Pelicans are on fire right now. And then the Rockets are just terrible. But I feel like this group is going to beat up on each other. But the Denver Nuggets still look like the best team in the league, so I have them coming out of the West Group B. And then West Group C, we have the Golden State Warriors, Minnesota Timberwolves, Sacramento Kings, San Antonio Spurs, and the Oklahoma City Thunder. In this one, the Warriors are actually playing still really solid, consistent basketball. The rest of these teams are battling through injuries like the Kings. And then we just have some really terrible teams in here like the Spurs and the Thunder. So I think the Warriors are actually going to pretty easily win West Group C. So in the East, I have the 76ers winning Group A, I have the Bucks winning Group B, and I have the Celtics winning Group C. And my wild card team I'm going with out of East Group B, I'm going with the New York Knicks. I'm just going with a random team. I was going back and forth between them and the Heat just because I feel like those are the out of the remaining groups in the Eastern Conference, I felt like those are probably the two best teams left, and I just went with the Knicks. And then in the West, I have the Lakers winning Group A, I have the Nuggets winning Group B, I have the Warriors winning Group C, and my wild card, I'm going with the Dallas Mavericks. They are on fire right now. I actually went back and forth between them and the Pelicans because the Pelicans actually are looking really damn good. Finally. So we'll see if they're going to have any consistency here, but that's who I'm picking to win those groups and ultimately move on to the second half portion of this in-season tournament, which, you know, it's going to be, like I said, the next month they're going to be playing this tournament, and we'll see what happens there. Then moving on to a little bit of sad news earlier in the week, the legendary coach college basketball coach Bob Knight passed away. He is, no matter what you think, because he was very controversial just because, you know, he was fired. He would throw some temper tantrums. He got handsy with one of his players by actually strangling him. So he ended up getting fired in that regard. He also, you know, had that moment where he fucking threw the chair out onto the court. So he's had his bad moments. But overall, Bob Knight is a legendary coach, no matter which way you look at it. His overall record was 902 wins and 371 losses, which puts him at fourth all-time ever. So 900 wins for a college basketball coach is one of the biggest things you could ever do. He is a three-time champion, of course. And then when he coached in at Indiana, his 1975-1976 team actually went undefeated. So he's actually done that a couple of times. But, you know, he had one of the most legendary careers ever. And RIP to Bob Knight. Now, we have a very hilarious, at least I think it's a hilarious, Trop 5 this week. You know, like I said earlier in the week, the Las Vegas Raiders are one of the most laughable organizations in the league, especially after firing Josh McDaniels after only not even two full seasons, like not even one and a half full seasons. But they fired him earlier in the week. And when you actually look at the history of the Raiders, it's very, very laughable. They have a lot of laughable moments. And I say laughable because I hate the Raiders, so their follies have always been laughable to me. So this week's Trop 5, I decided to do the Trop 5 Most Laughable Raiders Moments. And let me tell you, it was actually really difficult to whittle it down to 5. I was close to making this a Trop 10. That's how many laughable moments the Raiders have. And, you know, that's just what they've been. I mean, if you are like 20 years old right now, you have no idea that the Raiders are actually one of the most legendary organizations ever. I mean, they actually used to be great. They used to win championships. I mean, they have some legendary coaches. They have some legendary players. They've won multiple championships throughout their years. But then they just haven't been good at all. Basically since the 70s. I mean, they did have some moments in the 90s and in the beginning 2000s, but overall, the Raiders have been one of the most laughable organizations ever. I mean, they are so notorious for making some really stupid draft picks, really stupid deals, signing random-ass coaches, and then firing them 5 minutes later. They just, and then they also have some very legendary moments happen against them. So let's get right into the Trop 5 Most Laughable Raiders Moments, beginning with 5. This team leaving Oakland twice. They have left their city high and dry twice in their existence. So first, beginning in 1982, they left to go become the Los Angeles Raiders. And of course, basically the issues were stadium issues, as they usually are. Basically, Al Davis couldn't make the adjustments he wanted to make, so he was like, fuck y'all, I'm moving to L.A. Well, it was a battle. None of the owners approved of him moving to L.A., so basically what he ended up doing was suing the league, and the league lost, and he was able to just move on to L.A. like he wanted to do. And then he teased moving back to Oakland many, many times, but finally back in 1995, they moved back to Oakland. And then once again, they had issues trying to get a new stadium. So they were like, fuck you, Oakland, we're going to Vegas. And ultimately in 2020, they ended up moving to Las Vegas. It's just laughable because of course the Raiders would be a team that moves away, moves back, moves away, moves back, moves away, moves back. They can't fucking make up their mind. Stay in one spot. So we'll see if they're able to stay in Vegas. I feel like Vegas is going to be their home spot, but who knows? Maybe in 5 years, they'll move back to Oakland and then move away again. Move to Idaho after that. Who the fuck knows with this team? But it's just laughable that they are a team that, of course, doesn't move just once. They move twice away from Oakland. In my opinion, though, as a person who was born in the Bay Area, spent a lot of time in the Bay Area, Oakland is a total shithole. So I don't blame them for wanting to leave the city of Oakland twice. Then at number four on my top five laughable Raiders moments, the coaching carousel that is the Raiders. So first of all, they actually have two legendary coaches. I mean, legendary. You got John Madden. John Madden is John Madden. And he really did revolutionize a lot of things about the Raiders, and he just was an excellent coach. Then they went on from Madden to Tom Flores, who was a legendary coach as well, won them a few Super Bowls, and just was overall greatness, both of them, overall greatness. And then it just turned into the shit show that is the Raiders. Let's go through all of the coaches who lasted about one and a half, possibly two seasons. So let's start it off with the legendary Hall of Fame coach, Mike Shanahan. Now, he is not a legendary coach for the Raiders. He's a legendary coach for the Denver Broncos. Lucky for him, he only lasted one and a half seasons with the Raiders. He was their coach from 1988 to 1989. And then guess what they did to him? They fired him mid-season. That's where this all started. This is a theme you're going to hear throughout this coaching carousel that I rally off on. By the way, this is not just one or two coaches. This is so many coaches I can't even fucking count at this point. So let's move on to Mike White, who coached the Raiders from 1995 to 1996, getting fired midway through the season. Then they moved on to Joe Bugle, who only coached from in the 1997 season. And then they would have a little bit of a nice there moment there with John Gruden, who they would ultimately trade away to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And John Gruden's replacement was this guy named Bill Callahan, who lasted from 2002 to 2003. Then they moved on to North Turner, who lasted from 2004 to 2005. Then they would have Art Shell take over for him in 2006. Now, Art Shell actually did have a pretty decent coaching career back in the 80s with the Raiders. They thought they were going to catch lightning in a bottle with this one. No, didn't happen. He only lasted for 2006. Then they would move on to Lane Kiffin, who lasted 2007 to 2008, and he was also fired midseason. Then they moved on to the woman beater, Tom Cable. And when I say woman beater, that is not hyperbolic. That guy is a fucking asshole who has actually been arrested multiple times for beating up his ex-wives. I believe it's three times this guy was arrested for beating up his wives. It was barely ever mentioned as a coach in his time in the league. As a matter of fact, I still believe he is in the league, not as a head coach, but as one of the little minions. Last I checked, he was up in Seattle. Don't know if he's still there, but the scumbag Tom Cable, he lasted from 2008 to 2010. And then we had Hugh Jackson as his interim coach, only lasted in 2011. And then we had Dennis Allen from 2012 to 2014. So Dennis Allen made it a whole 2 year years with the Raiders. Then they moved on to Tony Sparano after they fired Dennis Allen midseason. Sparano took over for him for the rest of the 14 season. Then they moved on to Jack Del Rio, who coached from 2015 to 2017. Then they moved on to John Gruden again, but unfortunately that didn't last long because of that whole stupid shit where those emails were released, and so he ended up having to resign back in 21. So John Gruden had his second stint with the Raiders from 2018 to 2021. Then Rich Bisaccia would take over after Gruden would step down in the 21 season. And then we had Josh McDaniels, who lasted 22 and was just fired this week. So good luck, Antonio Pierce. I'm sure you're just going to last through the rest of this season, and we'll see who gets to take over on the amazing coaching carousel that is the Raiders. And yes, all of those coaches there, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 coaches. 15. Count them. 15 coaches who lasted only 1 to 2 seasons. I wonder why the Raiders are just so terrible. They're either terrible at making decisions on coaches, or they just fire their fucking asses before they're even able to get anything going. You might want to change up that just a bit, guys. But that was actually pretty hilarious when I went through all of that. When I first looked at it, I was like, Jesus Christ, Raiders. When you put it down on paper, it looks as bad as it sounds. Moving on to number 3 on my top 5 most laughable Raiders moments. The Immaculate Reception. The 1972 AFC divisional game between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the then Oakland Raiders. They were Oakland, right? Yeah, they were Oakland at this point in time. I mean, see, they've moved so many goddamn times, it's difficult to keep up with them. But this was when the Raiders were good, guys. When they were actually one of the most feared teams in the league. Them and the Steelers used to have some amazing games, and this was one of them. Now, what's so laughable about this moment is the Immaculate Reception is basically one of the most played over and over and over plays. I mean, you see it every single playoff. So it's shoved in their face every single year when the divisional round especially rolls around. So Pittsburgh Steelers are down 7-6, 1 minute left to go in the fourth quarter. And, I mean, this is obviously a just all defensive game. So Terry Bradshaw drops back to pass, passes it to John Fuqua, and my dude Jack Tatum, boom, delivers the big hit like he's supposed to. Now, this is pre-instant replay. Also, the camera angles not as good as they are these days. So it's still a controversial play because we're not quite sure. First of all, the rules at this time were if Fuqua had touched the ball, no Pittsburgh Steeler could actually catch this ball and run it back for a touchdown. If it bounces off of Tatum, though, then a Steeler can catch it midair and run it back for a touchdown. So that's in question. We don't know if it bounced off of either of them. But it looks like in real time, it just, boom, it just bounces off anybody. We don't know who it bounces off of. But basically, big old Franco Harris is in the right place at the right time. Tatum hits Fuqua. Boom. Ball goes flying up into the air. And Franco Harris just makes the biggest play. Now, here's another controversial part of this play. You can't tell if the ball hits the ground at any point because of the camera angles, because they're not that good. But Franco Harris does make the catch, runs back the touchdown, and the Steelers would ultimately go on to win this game, win the Super Bowl, and the Raiders are left to drown in their tears as usual. Now, number 2 on my top 5 laughable Raiders moments. Another playoff moment that is constantly shoved in their face every single year. And I gotta be honest with you, it's actually one of my favorite playoff moments because for me personally, I've said it many times on the show, I hate crybabies. I hate people who always have to cry about refs and cry about the one little play that just, oh, it hurted my heart so bad. I hate that shit because there's always multiple times you could go and point to that your team could have done better on a play and scored a field goal or scored a touchdown or stopped a field goal or stopped a touchdown from the opposing team. There's always multiple plays. It never comes down to the refs, even though it's the easiest thing that crybaby-ass fans got. But this is one of my favorites because every year Every year, Raiders fans get upset about it because it's always shoved in their face because it's a pivotal moment in one of the greatest football players of all time's career, because it basically was the beginning of the great career that was Tom Brady. And I'm starting it off with the Tuck Rule, y'all. We're talking about the Tuck Rule. The 2001 AFC Divisional playoff game between the New England Patriots and the Oakland Raiders. Yeah, I know, shocking. They were Oakland at this time, so yes, I know. At this point in time, it's a snow game. I mean, they're in New England, and it is snowing like a motherfucker. That's why it was such a low-scoring game. So we are in the fourth quarter. Patriots are driving. 2 minutes left to go. 13-10. Charles Woodson, the great safety. You know, he had a great career with the Oakland Raiders, had a great career with the Green Bay Packers. He actually would end up winning a Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers. Hell, he had an amazing career in college. Heisman Trophy winner at Michigan. So Charles Woodson, great, amazing football player, up and down, makes a huge sack on Tom Brady. Looks like the ball was fumbled, but there's this rule called the Tuck Rule. And, I mean, you don't know, but hey, this is why I hate when you fucking bitch and complain about the refs. Because guess what? They got to go back to instant replay and even look at this play. And they decided that this was not a fumble, that Tom Brady's arm was moving forward, and it was therefore an incomplete pass. And so what would happen? Well, Tom Brady would kind of just, you know, keep him in position, and Adam Vinatieri would come out, make the game-tying field goal. This would go into overtime, and ultimately the Patriots would go on to win. Not only would they win this game, but they would go on to win the first of their 6 Super Bowls and first of the 7 for Tom Brady. This was literally the beginning of the greatness that is Tom Brady. But what I love about it is it gets brought up every single year. And every time it gets brought up, Raiders fans is just so upset. They're just so sad. And it's like, well, you did have an entire overtime to try and win this fucking game. So even after the fact, you idiots still couldn't accomplish that shit. So to me, the Tuck Rule is even more hilarious than the Immaculate Reception, because the Immaculate Reception, it's a legendary play that you see all the time, but man, Raiders fans are way more crybabyish over the Tuck Rule, and the Tuck Rule it's just funny. It's just funny, and of course that would happen to the Raiders. But number one on my top 5 most laughable Raiders moments, and I remember this clear as day because it's one of my favorite Super Bowls. It's just irony at its finest. I mean, oh, I love irony too. I just love irony. I just love when shit comes to bite teams back in their ass, and this is just such a classic Raiders moment. So as I mentioned, John Gruden coached the Raiders, and they would ultimately end up trading him to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And what would become a hilarious moment in Raiders history is when Super Bowl 38 would happen, 2 years after they traded John Gruden to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Well, guess what? Super Bowl 38 ended up being the Oakland Raiders versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Ugh. I loved this Super Bowl because it was, you know, the Raiders were actually a really good team at this point in time. I mean, Rich Gannon was their quarterback. He actually won the MVP. Was it this season? I believe he won the MVP this season. They had Jerry Rice and Tim Brown on this team. I mean, two of the greatest wide receivers ever. I mean, obviously, Jerry Rice, one of the greatest football players of all time, but I know a lot of you don't know about Tim Brown. Well, Tim Brown was that dude. It was basically Jerry Rice and Tim Brown owned this shit. So the both of them are on the same fucking team. And also, this Raiders defense was pretty damn good, too. But the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were slightly better. And not only were they slightly better, but they smashed the Oakland Raiders 48-21. John Gruden versus his old team, and he put the smackdown on them. His defense just dominated. But beforehand, in typical Raiders fashion, before the game even happens, the day before Super Bowl 38, the Raiders center, who is one of their best players on the team, Barrett Robbins, would actually go AWOL the day before the Super Bowl. Apparently, he was diagnosed with depression like a couple weeks or before the Super Bowl. And he just had this like manic episode where he ran off from the team, went AWOL. And when he came back to the team, he was like cuckoo. So obviously, he was in no shape to be playing the Super Bowl. And so he didn't play the Super Bowl. So that's how it started. Then, of course, you know, you got the whole lead up with Gruden versus his whole team. And then the Tampa Bay defense just annihilated Rich Gannon. Like I said, Rich Gannon had an MVP season. Well, he threw for a Super Bowl record 5 interceptions in this game. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, it was one of the most laughable Super Bowls to me. Because like I said, I hate the Raiders. And for me, just the whole storyline of Gruden versus his old team. I mean, they traded him. They traded him. And he would end up not only beating them, but kicking their ass. That would be Tampa Bay's first Super Bowl ever in the history. I mean, if you are like 20 years old right now, you aren't aware that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were like the laughingstock of the league. The laughingstock. Then Tony Dungy turned them around, and then John Gruden took over for Tony Dungy and really just stacked this defense. Offense, they did enough to get the win because Brad Johnson was their quarterback at this time. Not a very good quarterback, but good enough to get the win. And yes, my most laughable moment with the Raiders, of course, is Super Bowl 38 when John Gruden absolutely mollywopped over his old fucking team. So that's the top 5 most laughable Raider moments. As I said, I could have added some more in there. I mean, you've got God, what is his fucking name? Oh my God. The quarterback. They took a number 1 overall. Oh my God, I'm drawing an extreme blank on the quarterback. I remember he played for LSU. He was the number 1 overall quarterback. Oh my God, what is his fucking name? It's going to hit me here probably after the show. But regardless, you know, remember they took him number 1 overall, and he turned out to be literally one of the biggest busts ever in NFL draft history. Fuck, it's going to bother me so bad I can't remember his name right now. But, I mean, there are just so many follies in the history of the Oakland, Las Vegas Raiders. It's just hilarious. And like I said, me naming off all those coaches, that's pathetic enough. But the fact that I could easily find 5 laughable moments, it was great. It was actually great putting together this top 5 laughable moments from the Raiders. So yes, everybody, enjoy the rest of the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.